One.
Okay, go. Welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. my name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Brandon Rhodes, and we are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
We're covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles, and alternative transportation, arts and culture, communications and the internet, and all kinds of other groovy things.
All right, did you notice how I was exaggerating my pronunciations there to make up for starting out poorly?
Well done.
Thank you, yeah. Yeah, anyways, we are here, of course, with our guest. Do you go by Jason? Bison? What's your...
Both.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
You guys can call me Bison. You know
yeah,
me.
Okay, yeah, yeah, indeed. Bison's a good friend of ours, and he's come in to speak with us. But I wanted to introduce him up at top so he can hop in whenever he wants. So, Brandon, how was your weekend and or week?
Pretty spiffin'. I got to go... spiffin' is right, yeah.
Is that right?
Uh-huh. So I went to Newport with my fiance her household, and we got a behind-the-scenes tour of the... aquarium.
The Oregon
there.
Aquarium. Yeah.
One of her housemates is a scuba diver, and she volunteers to clean out the shark tank, among other tanks.
That doesn't seem like something you'd volunteer
for. So cool. Wow. So we got to like walk around above them and look down and stare at all the fish. And there was a little dog, spiny dog
fish?
Shark thing, like a dog shark or some sort of thing. There's a shark with dog in the name, and it would hop out the water and stare at you. It would just
really?
Bob with its head out the water, just looking at you.
Like it was ready for lunch or something?
Yeah, or just kind of was like, hey, what the hell's happening over here? And then I also learned that halibut have a wandering eye.
Yeah, you were telling me about this earlier.
Or a meandering eye.
Oh, not like a lazy eye, but it's, actually an eye that migrates.
Yeah. It's born with one eye on each side of its head, and then it changes directions and rotates around the face to the other side. So,
man, all the interesting stuff you learn behind the scenes. Huh?
Yeah, cool. That's why they look so damn weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, I think if I'm not mistaken, Newport is the place where there is just outside of town the Yaquina Head outstanding natural area is what they call it. Which I mean, I'm sure it is actually very outstanding, but I always thought it was kind of funny that was part of the title.
It's outstanding. Like
you drive past
a little,
there's a sign
a little
that says,
bit insecure.
This
maybe.
Way, outstanding natural area. So, anyways, good times. That sounds like fun.
And you, how was your weekend, Brian?
My weekend, it was great. We went on a Cycle Wild camping trip for the first time successfully. Because those of you who out there listened to an earlier podcast where I talked about going on a Cycle Wild trip, but I think they ended up camping somewhere else, and we weren't traveling with the group. So we never actually ended up spending time with anybody else that was going on that trip.
But this time
we met up with folks who were members of Cycle Wild, a nonprofit organization who connect people with nature via the bicycle. And we went camping at Milo MacIver State Park just outside of Portland here. And that was a great place. And it was, I think it was State Parks Day. So all across Oregon, free admission for the day use areas, free camping at night, and there was cake. So
I think we were actually there and saw you.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
You were, because you lived
down by that area.
In Mawala.
Yeah. We went for a ride and went down to the park and saw a bunch of people camping. That's funny.
Nice.
Should have wandered around and be like, hey.
So really, we were like within 50 feet of each other and never knew it.
Near the plane, shall we?
That is funny. I mean, I was talking Bison about how your beard is bigger than it used to be, and mine is actually bigger than it used to be as well. So I think,
and mine is smaller. So
there's, if the three of us met in under different circumstances, there's a chance we would never recognize each other. But so, anyways, that was my weekend. It was
anybody
fantastic.
Outside of Portland
this has
is
been,
like
this
what
has been beard talk with Brock, Brandon, and Bison.
People in Portland are like, "Wow, this is the most interesting portion of the
episode." They're kidding.
It really is.
Tell us more about the beards.
Exactly.
I would also say that this weekend in Portland was probably the hottest weather that we've had probably all year. It was like, 80 degrees yesterday or something like that?
Yeah,
it was awesome.
And it was beautiful. But I think it was only about 30 miles from Mount Tabor, where we were attending a picnic where my wife and a bunch of her friends were at. And then we biked out to MacIver State Park. And it's only about 30 miles, I think, from one point to another. But with both the hill climbing that we had to do and the variations in just in weather and hotness.
Because like 2 days beforehand, it was cold enough that you had to wear a couple jackets.
Right,
it was
right.
January, as they say.
Indeed. Yeah. And so, yeah, the way things worked out, it was just like a summation of factors causing 30 miles on a bicycle to feel like 50 or 60. Right. So, and I'll say, when it gets to be that hot, sleeping in a sleeping bag is no fun at all.
Nope, it's horrible.
I've heard that you can get like a, one of those things that you sew up and you put yourself into a sheet. Sleeping bag liner is what they call them, I think. And you put them inside your bag. So if it is hot and sticky like that, you don't stick to the inside of the bag. I've been meaning to find a linen sheet that I could just sew up and make one myself, because that would be probably cheaper, I think, in most places. Anyways, good weekend. Well, we are here once again with Bison Morgan of, is it Arbutus Builders? Is that how you pronounce it?
Arbutus. That's the Latin name for Madrone, actually.
Oh, nice. Which is your son's name.
Which is my son's name.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. That's fantastic. So I guess I've been mispronouncing it for the month leading up to your appearance on the show. But
that's my worst nightmare. Nobody's going to know how to call it.
I would hope that you would forgive me.
You're forgiven.
Thank you. So officially. Bison Morgan of Arbutus Builders. And Brandon over there is making the sign of the cross in my direction. Thank you, sir. So should we roll into our headlines and cover some of the things on the internet?
Let's definitely.
Yeah. I've got quotes, by the way. This time.
Awesome.
Compare with the thrill of a brand new bike.
I like my bike. It's fast. I like my bike. It's fast. I like my bike. It's fast. It circles around the city lights.
All right, first up from what's not on the sheet, and that is open your fucking beer, Brock. We haven't even talked about the beer.
Well, that's headline number one, sir. That's
right,
exactly how it should be. what are we drinking, sir?
I'm drinking a Maripon.
Stop the noise right now. Oh. We'll talk about beer, and then we'll go into headlines. Oh. All right, here we go.
I like that one, though.
Oh, I'm sorry. It worked out nicely. Ham's beer is what I'm drinking tonight. Brandon brought home several choices, and I chose the cheapest and the best. Awesome. It's not the best, but you know.
I think that's technically a tall boy.
That is a tall boy. It's 24 ounces. It's great. Bison, what are you enjoying over there?
I'm drinking Ninkasi's oatmeal stout.
Yes.
Otis. It's awesome. It's one of my favorites.
And I didn't know that when we bought it at the store, but actually, yeah, you said when I handed it to you, hey, oatmeal beer is my favorite.
Yeah.
So. And you happen to know, I think you said, the person that started Ninkasi?
I actually don't know exactly what his relation to it
is. Okay.
But, yeah.
It's the Kevin Bacon game. It's like 3 degrees or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Morgan Miller.
Nice.
Good guy.
And Brandon, you are enjoying?
A Maripon Pale Ale by Deschutes Brewery in Bend, Oregon.
Oh, nice.
It's one of my favorites.
All right, and we'll be rating all of these beers, I think, at the end of the show. So
that's right.
All right, headlines.
Headlines.
Want to play the sounder again?
Sure.
I mean, you don't have to. We could just you play
I
part
like
of it.
My bike, it's fast. All right,
I
there
like
we go.
My bike, it's fast. Yeah, circles around the city streets. Right. Okay.
They should sing that. It'd be best.
There we go.
There we go. All right. So first one up from Shift to Bikes, it's Pedalpalooza, June 9th through 26th. We'll
indeed
be packed
it is.
Full of bikey fun.
That's right. Two full weeks of bicycle fun. And I have heard that there are many folks here in town who actually take their vacation time during Pedalpalooza
That's
so they can
awesome.
Just go on bike rides with friends all day long and have nothing getting in the way of them and bikey fun.
Yeah.
The two big events that I was going to underscore was the World Naked Bike Ride, which is June 18th. That's the day before I'm leaving town, so I may well be out there and visible.
All the way.
Possibly, yeah.
With your sprockets out.
Yeah.
Very visible.
It's true. And I've never done it. That's the thing. Ever since I've known about the World Naked Bike Ride, I've always said, you know, I should do this just for fun, just to kind of have the experience. And I think last year or the year before, they had like 5,000 people. It was like a huge stream of people. So that's a lot of flesh.
Are you talking about globally or just in Portland?
In Portland.
5,000 people.
I believe so,
naked
yeah.
people.
Mm-hmm. on bicycles.
Sad I missed
Yeah. But that's happening, what, it's like...
Try not to cry too hard on the air, okay, man?
I'll try to get my composure.
That happens downtown, and I believe after that, the World Clothed Bike Ride is happening, which...
doesn't seem quite as interesting as the
maybe it doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't pack as much of a media punch, but that's all also happening. The World Naked Bike Ride, as I understand, is you get as bare as you dare to get. So it doesn't mean you have to be buck naked, as they say, but you can you know, you can take off whichever layers you're comfortable with. The clothed bike ride, I don't know, maybe you're wearing as many layers as you can possibly fit, like overcoats.
Awesome.
And yeah, like your Dick Tracy outfit.
Wearing a sauna. Are you gonna go alone, Brock? Do you have
Well, I mean, I would assume if anybody else wanted to go with me, they could.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Although, in some ways, it seems like maybe that's an experience better had with strangers as well. So, hard to say. Yeah.
Who shows up to the bike ride, the naked bike ride alone?
Anyway. Yeah. And then the week after that, the Multnomah County Bike Fair, June 25th. And I'm not sure if I'm going to be in town for that or not, because I think we're still on a bike trip with me and some friends. But that is an afternoon packed with bikey goodness. And when I've been there, I think the Sprockets is a local bicycle dance troupe. Ooh. That has given performances. They have the derby. They have tall bike jousting. They have jousting of any kind at all. I remember a couple of years ago when I was there, they had I think they had a fellow who stripped down and took off his clothes for some jousting. So...
There used to be a group called the Chunk.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't
Chunkathlon,
heard.
Man.
Yeah, the Chunkathlon was like it was like this event, but on steroids. It was like burning pallets.
Yeah, yeah.
And shit,
they used to do it down like off of Powell when I lived there, and it was like a couple blocks from where I live, and the Amtrak would go by.
Uh-huh.
So there'd be like these people, like flaming people on tall bikes jousting, and it was like Amtrak going, people looking out the window, like what in the? I think it was like, you know, beyond Thunderdome going right on outside. You know, and they're like
Tina Turner's up there.
Exactly.
And you're just not in Kansas anymore at
all.
No,
yeah. Welcome to Portland.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, so anyways, yeah, we'll see you there.
That's exciting. Next up, Bike Portland telling us that Southwest Airlines is going to be waiving their bicycle fees for the duration of Pedalpalooza.
That's
so
right.
So on those days,
yeah,
June 9th through 26th.
Right, and that's, I believe, Southwest Airlines, if you have a flight leaving PDX, the Portland International Airport, they will waive your fee, which is usually pretty substantial, as I understand.
Like $50 or something?
Even like $150. Shit. Or something like that. That's on the heels of, was it Frontier Airlines, which declared that bicycles fly free like
yeah.
everywhere, which is great. So Southwest, anyways, as I understand, Bike Portland reported that it was a fellow Lentz resident, someone who builds, I think, cargo bikes. His name's Tom, I think. And I think he works for Southwest when he's not building cargo bikes, and it ended up convincing them to kind of make this concession for people, kind of make it a.
We got to track him down.
Another, I actually sent him an email, so okay. we may be discussing. We may have speech with him soon.
Speech.
Yes,
I like having speech. Speaking of speech, Bike Portland telling us about an industrial designer and boat builder team that's up to build a plywood cargo bike. That's
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's Michael Downs and Jeff Saylor are the team. I believe Michael Downs is the bike builder and Jeff Saylor is the boat builder. And here's a couple quotes from him here. We felt we could get away with using wood more with a cargo bike because there's not an archetype yet. What a cargo bike is kind of open right now. So basically, you know, if you try and build a regular bicycle out of plywood, it's going to look weird and funny, and it's not going to look like a real bike, and it may not be taken as seriously. But cargo bikes come in all shapes and sizes, as you'll be telling us later, Mr. Morgan.
Yeah.
So anyways, that was kind of exciting. It weighs 51 pounds, which is light for a cargo bike, says Downs, proudly. It also climbs well and has a super comfy ride. So he says, we can expect to see hatches and storage compartments in the cargo bin, as well as built-in lights and a sound system for good measure. So I'm kind of excited to see what they come up with. I have to keep our eyes peeled to bikeportland.org.
Absolutely. And we'll keep our eyes peeled there because next story from them as well. That wasn't that good.
That was a good segue. Nicely connected. It flows from one thing to another.
We'll have Segway Portland up next.
Yeah.
Beach school in Portland has a huge bike train. Oh, this video is crazy. That gets kids to school safely.
Yeah, yeah.
That
did you watch the video?
Yes, and I counted as far as I could, and then my eyes rolled in the back of my head and passed out.
Nice.
It was amazing.
Yeah. Well, I think the cool part of this story is it's a bike train. It's a bunch of kids all riding to bicycles to school at the same time with their parents and that sort of thing in a big line. It's like a critical mass for kids. so like critical mass, but to school. I think beach school used to prohibit bicycle riding. Like they used to say, kids, don't bring your bikes to school because it's too dangerous. I believe that was the reason. So anyways, that was really exciting. Like beach just kind of made this big turnaround, and now you got all these kids riding to school. And they're in a good part of Portland for that. Like, I think that's a pretty bikey part of Portland. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Hurrah.
Yeah, good on them. And finally, from the path less pedaled, can bicycles save small town America? A national bike route system might help.
Yeah. That's, of course, Russ and Laura from Path Less Pedaled. We've talked to them several times now. And, they were just talking about the idea that small town America, you know, a lot of economic zest has been pulled from them. People are moving out. Towns get smaller. Economies depend more and more on national chains as opposed to local vendors and that sort of thing. And they were talking about the juxtaposition of a national bike route system. I'm trying to remember who it was. I think the Adventure Cycling Association. Mm. Is that the name? Adventure Cycling Association? I can never remember. I always want to say something else. I think that's it. But they're working on a system that would integrate signed routes all over states. All over the nation. So you could hop on a road and kind of like we do here in Portland have navigational signs. You could say, well, I'm going to hop on bike route number 10 and it takes you, you know, like from Oregon to Colorado or something. Huh. But then along the way, as you're stopping in, you know, you're buying your food at little country stores, you're stopping in, taking advantage of people's hospitality, renting hotel rooms, that sort of thing. Bicycles could be exactly the kick in the pants that some people need, some economies need to stay viable. So yeah, I thought that was a neat idea. But yeah. Plus, also, Pathless Pedal is doing a bunch of kind of talking head style interviews with various movers and shakers in the bicycle communities in Oregon. And they've got some fantastic stuff, fantastic interviews they've captured. So
good on yeah. them.
Nice.
So that's what we have as far as headlines. So we should introduce here. I mean, we've already introduced Jason Bison Morgan. But Bison, we always have a we always have a fanfare. When we introduce a guest, and we have a couple options. There's a gong, there's kind of a royal fanfare, or more of like a classic, you know, silver screen era film fanfare type thing.
I'm all about the film fanfare.
Film fanfare.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I present to you Bison Morgan. There we go. How was that? That's right. And the crowd goes wild.
That was just me, actually. That was
it
was okay.
Well, it was yeah. It was, that's one thing I won't share. If you're interested in how to make crowd noise all by yourself, you got to talk to Bison about that sometime in person. he'll show you all the secrets of the trade.
Absolutely.
But Bison, you were a friend first, and then a guest later, as we were saying before we started rolling the tape here. You used to live in the neighborhood. We mm-hmm. got to know each other, but you have a quite a storied past as far as kind of being a person who's interested in simple life and sure. simplifying life in a lot of ways.
Uh-huh.
And you've done a lot of interesting things. So do you want to start maybe just telling us about kind of where you've come from in your life and what leads you to the point now where you are helming a construction company that is sustainable and green?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Little background, huh? Well, I live in Portland. I moved to Portland. Let's see. I was a freshman in high school. So what, 13, 14, something like that. My father was a, has always worked in resource extraction of one kind or another.
Oh, there we go.
He was a coal miner in Eastern Montana. Came to Oregon, worked for Columbia Helicopters, which is a logging company. So it's not, you know, it wasn't an obvious route for me. So I ended up, being very interested in being in Portland. It's not really a surprise, sustainability, you know, environmental, yeah. social justice, your typical, I mean, there's 1,000 of us here, you know, I'm not unique in that sense. I really focused my life during that period of time on environmental justice. I ended up working with an organization called Cascadia Forest Alliance.
Is that kind of like, was it like an Earth First sort of thing, or is it?
It was an Earth yeah. First organization.
Okay,
yeah,
so it's kind of under that heading.
Yeah, there is no organization sure. for Earth First. I was doing the air quotes.
Right.
Filling in for Brock.
Nicely done.
Yeah, there isn't really no Earth First organization. It's more of a loose affiliation of people, and Cascadia Forest Alliance was one of those. There was no, you know, nonprofit that, you know, we were just a group of people that felt, you know, very passionate about specifically the Northwest logging industry.
And specifically
public lands logging. So that's kind of what led me to, you know, that kind of passion for environmental justice. I've worked on a lot of social justice issues in Portland for most of my life. That's the bulk of it. I mean,
you've been a security guard, you've been an organizer, you've been a tree sitter, you've done quite a few different things.
Yeah, yeah. And I ultimately got, you know, to a point where I'm like, I'm tired of sleeping on rooftops and when I'm in town. So looked around and said, what am I going to do with my life? And it's like, oh, well, Carpenters Union seems to be accepting apprenticeships. So
yeah,
I jumped into that. When I started, I had no idea what that meant. It was kind of a impulse decision, if you will, you know, something I had nothing else to do. So
might as well take up carpentry.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And doesn't seem like an obvious choice for a environmentalist, but
right, right. But you go from sitting in the trees to
using them to build buildings down with them. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But you know, that also makes you think a lot, like about what exactly it means to be living in an industrial society, you know, and the responsibilities that go along with that. And I spent a lot of time reading and studying about how we live and what we live with, and specifically from a carpenter perspective, what kind of buildings we live in.
Mm-hmm.
So,
because everything is kind of made of wood, but there's a lot of ways you can approach that.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, you know, and it's really nuanced. Really, I mean, it's even when you do use wood, like when should you, how should you use it, where should you get it from? You know, I'm not entirely opposed to using wood. I just think, you know, there are smart ways to go about it and not so smart ways to go about it.
Sure.
It's actually during the tree sitting crazy, living in the woods phase is actually where I met Adrian, one of my partners. Sort of
right. He's working on that with you. And, mm-hmm. it's you and Adrian. Was there another person as well?
Me and Adrian, Valacinos Haley, a woman named Laura King.
Okay.
And Emil Ward. There's four of us actually.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we'll get into the structuring a little bit later, but
yeah, yeah.
Suffice to say, it's kind of a cooperative sort of endeavor. Like you're,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's not like you, any one of you is kind of the head honcho or the
no,
the shot caller, all that. But you and Adrian were sitting in trees.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm kinda curious.
Adrian actually went after that. He spent 2 years working as the bosun on the Steve Irwin. It was the I can't remember the name of the ship before that, but he worked for every fans of Whale Wars on TV. He was he was part of the Sea Shepherd. He was actually the bosun, which would be the head carpenter on a ship. He was on the Sea Shepherd for 2 years.
Nice.
Yeah.
So like the guy in Moby Dick that made the coffins for Queequeg.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Except I don't know that there's any coffins on the. Hopefully
right.
There isn't.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I hope not.
I was actually kind of curious about the tree sitting episode, just because it's such a far removed thing from what most of us would do. But
yeah.
I mean, you were driven by passion and driven by principles,
and
that led you to remain in trees when they were in danger of being cut down.
Yeah, basically, what we were doing is there would be a timber sale.
Uh-huh.
The state government or the federal government, depending on which, if it was on state land or federal land, would auction off a timber sale, and through a variety of organizations. Actually, anybody that's listening to this, check out BARC, because they still do a lot of really good work. They monitor timber sales. They monitor projects on public lands and kind of like are a watchdog organization. Working through with groups like that, basically they would be like, groups like BARC would be the ones that are like watching legislation and filing lawsuits. Well, what happens a lot of times is a lawsuit is filed and as you know, the legal process takes a while. Logging doesn't take as long as the legal process. So what would happen is a lawsuit would be filed, and in the meantime, the logging company goes in and logs the timber sale.
The trees are just gone.
And the lawsuit gets done, and like, oh, yeah, you're right. That wasn't a legal sale. Too bad it's already been cut, you know. So groups like Cascadia Forest Alliance, basically what we would do is just delay tactics, go out in the woods and do things that I won't detail. But, you know, one of those things would be to go up in a tree, set up a platform, and sit in the tree so they can't cut a tree down because it would kill you.
Right.
So you just, you know, do things like we call it cat and mouse. We'd run around the woods when the loggers were out there and run around and try to, you know, make the loggers chase us, because if they can't catch us, we're in the woods and they can't cut trees down while we're there.
Yeah.
So they had to clear us out. So lots of delay tactics like that. And
yeah,
I spent months and months and months living in the woods, you know.
Did you ever have a good conversation with the logger, or at least a conversation with a logger?
Oh yeah. There were some fun ones, actually. I remember one story down in Southern Oregon. I wasn't there for this one, but it was really cool. A logger had lost his chainsaw and he came to the tree and he's like, "Hey," he called up, and he was, actually, I think Adrian was there for that one. I'm not sure, but he lost his chainsaw and he's like, "Hey, can you see my chainsaw from there?" He's like, "Yeah, it's with orange, you know, they're bright, yeah, day glow orange, you know, when you're 80 feet in the air, you have quite a view, you know." And it's like, "Oh yeah, it's like way over there."
Right over there. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess the next day I
could, but please don't use it, sir.
Exactly. The next day, I guess the guy's wife brought a cake and shoes. She was worried all these hippies out in the woods were so poor that they didn't have shoes, so she brought them shoes. I'm like, trying to explain to this lady, we don't wear shoes.
We just don't like them.
Yeah, we're feral people living in the woods.
It's like the mule lady.
Yeah, exactly. The mule lady. Did I tell you what the mule lady?
Yeah. Okay. Fill us in. I remember parts of it, but you should, at least for the audience.
There's a woman.
Best refrain ever.
Yes.
There's a woman that lives, I don't know if she's still there, but she... Through the people that lived, because of the Cascade Forest Alliance was a group in Portland, Cascade Forest Defenders, which still exists in Eugene, had some tree sits and stuff, and they, through that process, they met this lady called the Burl Lady. She lives in the woods with the burl.
Yeah.
Just wanders around.
She wanders up and down the Pacific Crest Trail, right? And she has little tiny fields under the Doug Fir for her own little,
apparently,
like,
I mean,
yarrow root or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, she didn't show us anything. You know, she's super, like, you know, I mean, she wouldn't talk to anybody except for us, because
right,
we seem to be somewhat kindred spirits.
Trees.
Yeah, exactly. We're out in the woods with her and we're there for a long time. So she didn't even, you know, she avoided us too, but you're going to run into somebody like that. I'm actually kind of curious if she's still there. I'd like to know.
Yeah, I would imagine.
If you have found the Burl Lady,
if you know where the Burl Lady is, please call us, Crime Stoppers.
We will have you on the show.
Yeah,
in a heartbeat.
We should try and find the Burl Lady and see if she'd come in here.
I've actually never spoken to her. I've just seen her from a distance.
Oh, okay, so you don't have
I know
any...
she exists, but...
Yeah.
I still believe.
Yeah, I still... Yeah.
Need to get some bumper stickers.
She lives with Sasquatch somewhere.
Yeah. I was actually just, as you were mentioning bark, I remembered I'd seen the name somewhere before, and so I pulled up on the internet the Cycle Wild site, because I think that was where I'd seen it, and indeed I had.
Oh, yeah.
So I think Cycle Wild and bark are affiliated with each other somehow, if only...
Wouldn't just surprise
like,
me.
Yeah, just I like bark, you know, and they like Cycle Wild or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Well, we should let's put a break in the program here. I'll throw some music in here for your ears. Some tasty music from Centerball. This is music. This is a song called "On a Roll." It's from their 2010 EP Momentum, and Centerball is from Long Beach, California. And I believe they are actually on a farewell tour, or they're playing a couple farewell shows now. But they're just kind of wrapping up their tenure as a band. So, Centerball, "On a Roll."
Well, it wasn't something that- Cause Lord knows I don't work. And people take offense when you ain't making rent and you still get dessert. I've been looking in the mirror, hoping to see clearer the reasons for my hell. I've been digging deeper, searching for the secret why things are well. Been looking at my peers who have it all clear to never lose a step. If we got the movement, then we got to use it before there's nothing left. We'll be right back.
You've got mail.
That wasn't it.
You want to drop that on us one more time?
Out hustling everybody else.
That's what we're doing here on The Sprocket. And wanted to let you guys know, we've got an email address. It's thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. You can call us, leave us a message. Our phone number is 503-847-9774. We also have a Facebook page. You can connect with us there. You'll actually get a personalized welcome from me if you like us. So there you go. And donations, if you want to pass on some money to us, if you like what you're hearing, if you want to buy Bison Morgan a beer, you can do that. It's got a little donation button right on the right side of our website. We got listener David, who's actually used to be a friend, David, a guy I knew back in another town that I lived in Vancouver, Washington. And he said, "Hey, you know, thanks for the thanks for the show. And I only have this $1 in my PayPal account, but here it is. It's yours. So thank you, David. We appreciate that muchly." What was
he let about 14 ounces out of those 24 ounces of hams you've got there?
That's right. Yeah,
that's great.
No, he was talking about how he, like I think he was on the plane and he was lolling or something. He said that
he was what?
Yeah, laughing out
lolling.
Loud.
Lolling. Yeah. Oh, LOL.
Yeah.
Brock is trying to talk like the teeny types.
I'm trying to prove that I can still hang with the kids. but
out hustling.
You drive a bus,
else.
Right? You hang with kids a lot.
I
is
do.
That where you learned that?
I'm not sure.
You know just that. Hear kids going la 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 on the back of the bus.
That's for a different reason, Brandon.
Oh.
It's
a short bus.
Anyways,
oh.
Just completely lost our shit.
We like to bring the LOLs to you whenever we can. And so anyways, David, thank you so much for your I think he called it a widow's mite. It was all he had, but what he had, he gave. So good man. We've got a suggestion from an anonymous listener. Dan Price is the name of the fellow that this anonymous listener suggested. And yeah, we've got his voicemail, I believe. Is it right here?
Yeah, I got it.
Yes, just wanted to recommend an interview for you guys, Dan Price of MoonlightChronicles.com. Guy rode a recumbent tricycle from Joseph, Oregon to Key West, Florida a few years ago. He's an artist and kind of a self-proclaimed hobo, and he's just a few hours from you. Check out the YouTube video on his ride and on his very unique home, an extremely simple life, at YouTube and type in Part of the Solution, Part One. Enjoy.
So yeah, you anonymous, you never told us who you were, so we're going to hold you. We can hold that against you until you call back and identify yourself. But yeah, thank you so much. I checked out his website, and Dan Price is actually he's a cool looking guy, and he produces a zine. He doesn't have an email address on his website actually, but you can mail him your cash, and he will mail you a zine. And I think he splits his time between living in Oregon and living in like Hawaii and going surfing and stuff. And seems like he really has maybe some of the best life possible. So, iTunes review, Brandon, you said this was cute.
It's very cute. Yeah. We got an iTunes review from Cheese 89.
Great name, by the way.
Yeah, it is. I wonder when they were born.
It's a good question.
Yeah. The title of the review was, "It's like you're hanging out with friends."
That's right.
Yeah. And shall I read?
You shall.
I'll read the review. Love the relaxed nature of this podcast. The format is great and the guests are quite interesting people. The hosts aren't preachy, just cool guys having a beverage, talking about alternative transportation, civil living, gardening, et cetera.
Oh, yeah.
always excited for a new episode. Semicolon and parenthesis.
I think that's an emoticon.
Oh.
I think he smiled at us. Oh, if indeed Cheese 89 is a he, maybe it's a she.
Kids these days.
I know.
Brock should have read it. He knows what those mean.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not hip with the new shit. Sorry.
Well, you know how it goes. So, anyways, there's that. If you want to leave us a review on iTunes, we do appreciate it. It helps convince iTunes that we're doing something that people care about. So, if you'd like to share this and help it get some more recognition, you could leave us a review as well. And we would be that much more happy and excited about that if you did. Last but not least, June is our survey month, so we've got $10 in our hot little hands, and we're gonna give that to whoever. Basically, you take the survey, you give us your email address, and we'll take all of those and put them into a literal hat. I have like a bowler hat, like a derby.
It's awesome.
From the 1930s.
That your wife's grandpa handed down to her, yeah?
I think it was my side of the family, but it was some like, you know, cousin, third removed, what have you. But yeah, we'll take all those email addresses. We'll put them
it's
in a
hat.
It's
not some fucking hipster hat.
It's legit.
Not,
it's not a little hat. Yeah. Okay. It's one of the, it's legitimate.
We don't wear it just to get laid.
That is true.
Sorry.
But yeah, we're going to take the email addresses. If you take our survey, we'd like to know what you think about the podcast, what you like, what you don't like, what you'd like to see change. Yeah, you take the survey, and if we draw your name out of that hat, we'll give you $10, possibly in the form of a gift card, and possibly just $10. So yeah, depends on where you are. If you live in Portland, we'll probably just hand it to you. But
we want to know how to make this show even more awesome.
Right, right. And we can only do that with you because we thrive on the interactive nature of it all. So anyhow, that's...
Yeah, we do.
We do, yeah. Upcoming shows. Brandon, you want to read these off?
Yeah, yeah. On the 13th of this fair month, John Boblett of Portland Pedal Lounge.
And he's a cool guy. I actually met him, I think, last week? Week before.
And our neighbor just called me over to show me a picture on his smartphone that he took because he saw the Pedal Lounge and knew I would be excited about it. So, yeah rumors, you know, word of mouth is spreading. On the 20th of June, Jed Lazar of Soup Cycle, the 27th. Brock, Joe, and Jeff's brewery tour.
We'll be fresh off of our tour, and we'll be giving an update of that.
Hooray! And then finally, on the 5th, we're going to be chatting up with Friedel of Traveling2.com. She's
right.
From the Europe, isn't she?
She's from the other continent, sir.
The old world.
Yeah, and actually, both Jed and
America
Friedel,
1.0.
Yeah, we actually recorded their interviews with them, a couple weeks ago, and so... we've just been saving those for you.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we're gonna dispense them like a Pez machine. Exactly.
Pry our heads backwards, and one of these interviews will emerge from our gullet
at exactly the right time. So, yeah. Well, we are here, of course, with Bison Morgan and Jason Bison Morgan of Arbutus Builders. And you want to tell us a little bit? We talked a little bit about your background, and now we'd like to talk about Arbutus Builders in specific. I want to start with what sparked the idea for a sustainable construction company.
Yeah, that's great. I think it started with me and Adrian have.
That's Adrian the tree sitter.
Adrian the tree sitter.
Adrian and I.
Adrian and I. Thank you.
Brandon, you're such a grammar Nazi.
We've worked a lot together on different projects around town. He's a builder too. I mean, Adrian actually went to school as a sculptor in Madison, Wisconsin.
Still do that. That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. He's a lot of Midwesterners in Portland. He's one of them. And we've talked about it a lot about what we do and how to do it more responsibly. Just working under the radar, you don't get to be very choosy about what you do. So we decided that we would want to become more legitimate so that we could be more choosy about what we do.
So you could sleep at night.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, having an environmental consciousness and being a, you know, under the radar carpenter, you kind of take what you can get, which sometimes you're like, I don't know if I feel good about this. So,
right.
So we started talking about how to do that. And, one of the things besides bikes that's big in Portland is cooperatives, worker cooperatives, Red and Black, the Stumptown Printers. There's a bunch of them.
People's
Food Cooperatives. Yes. Is a cooperative. There's like three food cooperatives in Portland. We started looking around at models for workers' cooperatives, and we actually found several construction companies that operate as cooperatives. There's one in a really cool one in Montana called Big Timber. Or Timberworks, I'm sorry. Timber would be the state motto of Montana. Timberworks, which is really cool. If you want to check it out, it's a cooperative company. It's called Timberworks. They actually have a wood mill and a forge. They build all of the stuff themselves. It's crazy. And as a craftsman and a builder, I was like, wow, this company's awesome. And then just one day, this woman named Laura happened to be at Adrian's house. Adrian lives in a cooperative house. A bunch of people live there.
Uh-huh.
Turns out she helped build an organization or a company in the Bay Area called Wood Shanty. And they're a cabinet shop, and they're a worker cooperative. They're worker-owned. Everybody, Democratic workplace, we'll get into that later. And she was like, wow, this sounds really interesting. I happen to be somebody that is – my passion right now is workplace democracy, building worker cooperatives. I'm interested in being part of what you're doing. So she came on board. And then our friend Emil, who is also a builder in town, was interested. And these are all people that – Adrian and Emil I know well, and I know that we can work well together and that we have a really good rapport. So, yeah, and that's kind of what the impetus that behind that was, that we wanted to do something that we were passionate about and enjoyed. We love building, but we wanted to really think about it and think about how we can do that in a responsible, both environmentally and socially responsible manner.
Nice. So, what are some of the ways that you came up with for that? What set you apart maybe from your standard construction company?
Well, there's two main ways. Number one, we have a very rigid or passionate feeling for sustainability and looking at how specifically when it comes to remodeling, because that's kind of like where we want to direct our niche. Like,
okay.
The world, or the United States, we have built our homes poorly.
Uh-huh.
We've slapped them up. We haven't really spent much time thinking about, you know, longevity, what it's like to live in these structures.
Well, like the average suburban home is built to really last only about 7 years.
I mean, then
it starts falling apart.
Yeah, like
kind of like an iPod
after World War.
Or at least, yeah,
Apple. Those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, after World War II, a guy named Levitt, I forget his first name.
Joseph Gordon.
Joseph Gordon no, Levitt.
That's not right.
Let's just assume it's Joseph Gordon.
It was him and his two sons.
Something like that.
Yeah.
The Levitt.
My three sons. The Cape Cod.
Yeah. They basically decided that, like, they looked at the Ford model. You know, Henry Ford is all, you know, had basically developed the assembly line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And said, how can I most efficiently, you know, make money.
Just crank stuff
at
out.
At building houses. And they bought huge tracts of land. I think it was in Pennsylvania, actually, and built cookie-cutter houses just, you know, to sell to veterans coming back.
In Long Island a lot.
Right.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, yeah.
It was on Long Island.
And
that's our neighborhood that we live in here, Brandon. That's basically is kind of tract housing. It was all laid out, and all the houses are fairly similar to each other, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Bits and pieces, but yeah, that's broadly the post-war pattern.
Yeah, essentially, I mean, most houses are built in that fashion.
Just kind of plop down as fast as possible.
I currently live in Mullally in a very typical Levitt Town type of arrangement.
And if they aren't the exact same house, they're a mirror of one. Yeah, yeah. You'll find a flip side of it.
Yeah, and they're built very poorly, and poorly from the perspective of longevity, how long will these buildings last, whether they're healthy to live in. And
like eventually the glue starts to release things that, you know, give you brain cancer.
Even in this house. I mean, basically everywhere we live now. And so that's that sort of model just kind of took over the building industry. And whether they're commercial or residential houses, they were built very poorly. They were not built for longevity. They were built, you know, like pretty much everything else we have in this country, they were built to, you know, planned obsolescence. They were built to fall apart so that, you know, this is the capitalist way.
Every decade you got to buy a new one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but houses don't go away. They stay. So, you know, that's kind of what we're focusing on, is like looking at the way people live and thinking about the remodeling industry. The remodeling industry, there's some real problems with it. One of the, you know, I don't know the exact number, but the vast majority, I mean, it's obvious to look at, the vast majority of buildings in a city are residential or small commercial, you know.
Sure. As opposed to high-rise.
And single-family residential at that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, strictly from a building count, it's overwhelmingly single-family.
Yeah, and while I was working in the remodeling industry, I worked for a large remodeling company. I'll avoid saying their name.
Of course.
But
although I've driven past them several times.
Yes. I started to realize, like, wow, the amount of stuff, this Blackwater remodeling.
That's right.
They're probably in that industry somewhere. But I started looking at, like, the amount of material we send to the landfills.
Yeah.
You know, just people wanting, I mean, I was remodeling houses where they had remodeled the kitchen 3 years earlier, and we were ripping the entire thing out, sending it to a landfill. I mean, I had one job where I had a large truck, and I think I probably took 40 or 50 loads to the landfill from that truck.
That's a lot of stuff.
And I was just like, there's got to be – we got to think about this more. Like, we got to stop and, like, think, okay, what are we doing? What, you know, is there better other ways to do this better? Should we be doing it at all, you know? And, I mean, that's, you know, I'm kind of getting out of the impetus, but that's – you know, all in all, that's kind of like what wrapped that up is like we wanted to be involved in our craft in a responsible way.
Yeah, that's great.
Uh-huh.
Was there another aspect you had mentioned the sustainable, like what it looks like?
Oh yeah, well there's the socially responsible aspect of it. Me and Adrian tend to obviously retreat sitter, you know, sit in trees and stuff.
Sure,
we tend towards the more liberal aspect of, you know, like many of Portlanders.
I wouldn't have guessed.
Yeah. Yeah. So we from the beginning, we really, really committed to making it socially responsible or being part of like the social economy. Social economy is the phrase usually used to describe things like cooperatives, nonprofits, as opposed to the private sector and the public sector. It's, you know, it's not, you know, it's not a for-profit. We're not existing to make money. We're existing to provide people with living wage jobs and at the same time contribute positively to our communities.
So that's kind of like a triple bottom line sort of thing where you're good for good for business, good for the environment, and good for the people around you.
Yeah, yeah. And good for business, I think that phrase like a lot of times meant like good for growth. Like
sure.
We're not necessarily interested in seeing Arbutus grow.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're not even actually interested in seeing Arbutus
make money.
Maybe multiply
is a model. But
multiply is a model to create more jobs because to increase jobs for specifically for people that have traditionally been left out of the economy. People of color, the poor, you know, working poor, people with that have been excluded from higher education, you know. That's our, you know, that's our focus, creating jobs for people that need them and contributing positively to our communities.
Yeah.
From a traditional business model, we will look like failures almost every single year because our, you know, our balance sheets can always come out in the, you know, the red. It's going to look that way, but everybody, all of us are going to make money and not, you know.
And that's where
we're working, not because we're making money off of the profit of the business. So any, you know. In the beginning, I think the goal is to give away 50%, or create a fund for 50% of our corporate profits, like the profits from the business. The rest of it's going to go back into the business for now.
Right. Just because you have to build something and establish it. And,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. But the eventual goal is to take any corporate profits and further those goals, you know,
that's
through,
great.
Providing grants for education or,
right.
I mean, you can imagine a million different things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're eventually ostensibly functioning as a nonprofit, but we don't want to be a nonprofit construction company.
Bison, I want to ask you about, so like, let's just reflect on who you are. You're
okay.
You know, you've done some tree sitting, you've done some anarchist organization stuff. You did some stuff that's at the very fringe of things. And now you're starting up a business,
mm-hmm.
right? Working within the market. Oh God, I almost tipped over my beer.
No,
you're working. That would be a fucking tragedy.
This carpet is great.
No, you're working in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I imagine you've got some good friendships with people who are still who are functioning more in the tree sitting end of things.
Sure.
Do people say this is selling out? Do people say this is you're compromising or you're mm-hmm. you're become some goddamn capitalist or something? Or what do people say?
No, not at all.
That's great.
I think that the cooperative movement, is fairly well established. There's a actually a national organization. The name slips me right now. I work mostly with, or I'm more interested in, the Western Worker Cooperative conference. There actually is at Brighton Bush, which is down in on the border of Willamette and Mount Hood National Forest. There's a conference this September that we'll be going to.
Great.
With worker cooperatives from the West Coast. And, nice. and that sort of business model is what I feel to be a very proactive version of anarchism. I mean, we are egalitarian. I mean, our organization, there is no boss, you know. We work for ourselves, you know.
So how do you get things done?
We fired our boss. collective decision making. I mean, we make decisions. There's only four of us, so it's not that complicated. You know, there's only four of us. We basically make decisions democratically. So the major decisions are made democratically, like the direction of the business stuff, the day-to-day operations. Like we evaluate who has skills where, mm-hmm. and empower that person to be involved in those skills. I mean, Laura has, her skill set is really in the cooperative development. She really knows how to, mm-hmm. to run a cooperative business. My skill set is in like project management and, mm-hmm. and design, and I'm a journeyman carpenter, you know?
Sure.
So that's, so we respect people's, skill sets and empower them to act in that way. But in the end of the day, we all have equal say in what goes on, and we share equally in the profits. We share equally in the bounty.
It's a shared fate. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's, I don't think that's, I would think even within some of the more radical elements of the anarchist community. I mean, there's the Red and Black Cafe in Portland is a worker cooperative. Mm-hmm.
Right. And they've been around.
Yeah. And they're explicitly anarchist. Like Red and Black is the colors
yeah,
of
yeah, that's...
the syndicalist anarchist. So, I mean, the IWW, there are members of the IWW. There's Stumptown Printers. They're also a worker cooperative. It's well established. It's well respected within that community of people. That's
I was going to say, you have solidarity economics as a term that you wanted to bring up. Is that,
Solidarity economics is, I kind of just described that basically. Okay. Solidarity economics is just, it's an aspect of the social economy. Yeah. Solidarity economics is basically just saying that, we're trying to create an alternative to the capitalist system where, you know, profit drives everything. Like the bottom line is making profit, and that's good for everybody. And which is
right.
Which we don't believe is true. I mean, I think you can pretty much look around the world and see that the bottom line is not good for everybody.
Right.
It's good for a certain select few. So, we're not interested in that. That's where the aspect of creating jobs for people and, mm-hmm. you know, creating an economic situation where the motivation is to, be an advocate for those people that have been left behind by the capitalist economy or globalization at this point. I mean, capitalism is kind of I feel personally is an antiquated term, you know, globalized capitalism.
Right. It doesn't necessarily mean what was it? Adam West? No, that's somebody else.
That's Batman.
Batman.
That's Batman.
The guy that's on Family Guy. That guy.
Adam Weishaupt. No, he did the Illuminati.
I was thinking of the fellow who wrote the tome on capitalism originally. We'll look it up.
Yeah.
But what? Yeah.
We're all educated people
you
here.
You told me I couldn't use that noise, but I did.
There it is.
Yeah.
Basically, what I was thinking was that.
I'm Googling it.
That it's not what he had in mind. Like capitalism as it exists today is a much different beast than perhaps its ideals were.
Yeah, and
meant to be.
I can't think of anything specific examples, but I think that people in his period of time could not have foreseen what was happening now.
Sure,
I think he might have had. I think even the person that we're talking about.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name.
Adam Smith.
Adam Smith. Thank
that's
you.
It.
Of all names, it was just a Smith.
Exactly. I think he might even have a different perspective. I mean, that's my personal opinion from reading his writing. Like, if he were to understand the ability to like fly from, you know, Portland to London in a couple hours and do business and be home by the evening, you know, it would change the things a lot, you know.
Right.
So, I mean... That's a core value of Arbutus is that we are not interested in the bottom line. We're not interested in making a lot of money. We're not interested even, you know, in making, you know, we're interested in making a modest living that is reasonable for somebody that lives, you know,
a living wage.
Exactly. Yeah. And spreading the wealth around. Like if we gain more wealth, that gives us an opportunity to hire more people and provide more people with jobs, not, you know, buy bigger houses or
right. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that affects. I mean, even the solidarity economics that affects what kind of jobs we take, who we'll work for. It affects every decision we make. It's not, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
Well, let's
fucking A.
Exactly.
That's right. I support that wholeheartedly, sir. You want to tell us about the cargo bike before we wrap things up?
The cargo bike.
Yeah, because that was kind of exciting.
And also, yeah, that actually reminds me that you guys had a St. Francis mm-hmm. Plumbers.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I actually picked that guy's cart up. I was at that cargo bike store on I can't remember the name of the place. I went there to look at different kind of cargo bikes, sure. And he had his card there, and I was like, wow, this is exactly what we're looking for. And that's an aspect of what we're doing. We're looking for subcontractors, people we can work with that have equally passionate about sustainable building. I adjusted my glasses.
That's the second time I tried taking your picture, and you did this both times.
Oh, man. I actually grabbed that guy's card, and at some point we need a plumber. We'll contact him because he does, as your listeners know.
That's right.
He does his work from a bike.
Right, and he slays falcons. He doesn't actually slay.
Oh, he does. That was awesome. That was a good story.
Slays falcons?
No, downloaded.
He observes falcons from the perch of his cargo bike. He's like sailing.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
episode
yeah.
15 or so, 16?
A bird goes right in front of him. Yeah.
Oh, so. Nice. And then that's part of our, you know, that's part of our you know, commitment is to do everything as fossil fuel free as we can.
Right. And that's a very unusual, very atypical for construction to
very difficult too.
Right.
Yeah,
to move anything without fuel. So
yeah, for sure.
Fossil
and
fuel.
As part of that, Adrian for example, when Adrian was in college, he was told he had to create something with a drawer in it. A project with a drawer in it.
So
and
hey.
Everybody built, you know, cabinets and dressers and stuff. Adrian built a bike copter. With a little wood drawer in it for storing the keys.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so it was a big bike copter. He actually lived in the Madison Community Cooperative, and I guess...
Copter?
Like bike copter. Had, yes, blades on the top of
like
it.
Like a helicopter.
You pedal it and blades. It didn't actually take off. But
sure.
It would have been cool if it did. But
it had a drawer in it, which was the principle.
Exactly. It had a drawer. Yeah. I think he said he got a D on it or something. But he's an accomplished builder of metal things. So.
Yeah.
When we talked about Arbutus, he might even actually started before he decided he was going to build a cargo bike. So,
very nice.
The cargo, I'll get you guys a picture of it so you can put it on your website.
Awesome.
But
yeah.
It's built a lot like a Bakes Feet, but instead of having a big container in the front, it has a removable section where you can either have a big container or a seat. And the seat goes there because there's another bottom bracket in the front.
There we go.
So there's two sets of bottom brackets on it. So one person can sit in the front and someone can sit in the back.
Okay.
And the person in the back steers, the person in the front just pedals.
Would that give you additional towing power?
Yeah, it gives you that extra horsepower because you have two people pedaling.
There we go. Pull things or haul things.
I think he might be done with it now. I'll even get pictures of that. There's this little trailer that attaches to the back of a cargo load. So we could actually have like a big, you know, 12 by... you know, 6 beam on it that's 20 feet long.
Yeah.
And there's a trailer that attaches that actually has cable brakes. It has a brakes on it.
Nice.
The cable goes all the way up to the bike. And it has its own brakes on the trailer because if you're hauling a load like that, it's going to be very heavy.
You're going to need to stop things, as we all know from our previous trailer experience. Yeah.
And the idea is the way he has it designed is the idea is that we can drive it to a job site. Web 2.0. We can drive it to a job site, and it has some legs that pop down, and it mounts with a table saw.
Uh-huh.
So we can actually drive it to a job site and then use it as a table, like have the table saw on it, and it's like drive it to a job site, pop it up, and it's our work table too.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's really cool. I'll get you guys a picture of it. But that's a goal of ours is to do jobs that we can as fossil fuel free as we can,
is really exciting.
Yeah, it's gonna be a challenge because I mean, as you can imagine, we use heavy things in building.
Right.
I mean, lots of wood, lots of brick and stuff. So we'll see how well it works. But I've been well impressed by his accomplishments with that. So
you're gonna have legs of steel for moving them around.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Good for us and good
can
for
be
the world.
Eating like 5,000 calories a day.
Exactly.
Right. Man.
There's no better time to eat hamburgers, my friend. That's the best way to go.
Do you have a accessible way to contact?
Yeah, you can. We have a website, arbutusbuilders.com.
And we'll put a link up to that on our website as well at thesprocketpodcast.com.
That's the best way to contact us, and the contact information is on there. I mean, you can learn more about what we do and how to contact us. And
yeah.
hire you.
If hire us, please.
Indeed. That's
tell someone who might.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it ARBUTUS?
Yes.
Builders.com.
Yes.
All right.
Absolutely.
Very good. Well, let's talk about the beer before we wrap this whole shenanigan up.
Yeah. So here, you guys can pick a square that you think merits your as our listeners know.
There we go.
On this Rate That Beer sheet, we have several different qualities of the beer that we can choose from and several different options within each one. So today I will be describing the Mirapond Pale Ale as I would say, oh, for God's sake, color. The color is mine for amber or copper. I don't know what that means, but it's okay. It was a good beer.
Oh, yeah.
I've always loved Mirapond. I've only ever had like one or two mediocre batches of it. They seem to be really good at making a very consistently awesome beer. And what's so great about it is in my opinion, they only use one hop, but they managed to make such a great flavor using an extremely simple recipe. So there's a lot of elegance to this simple recipe. So
simplicity.
Makes me happy.
Informed. Yeah. Let's see. Did you have yours ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, do it.
I'll go with mouthfeel. I'm drinking the Ninkasi Otis Oatmeal Stout. It's I like the mouthfeel. It's creamy like velvet.
Nice.
Ooh, smooth. Nice. Man, I love this stuff.
Yeah. I described another one like that earlier.
I'd almost say chewy enough for dinner, but oatmeal is more of a breakfast food, you know?
Right.
Chewy
right,
enough so. For breakfast?
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, the Hams beer, just as the label is concerned, I think it was quality printing. So
For real.
Yeah. Well, let's put the lid on this whole thing.
That's right. It's been a good one.
It has. I would say to you, good fellows and sirs and madams,
if you would like to find us online.
Indeed. Well, you can.
You can find us at thesprocketpodcast.com, or if you'd like to leave us a voicemail, suggest good topics or whatever, call us at
503-847-9774. Got to thank Ryan J. Lane at myspace.com/RyanJLane for giving us our music, hurtbirdmusic.com for giving us our headlines music, and we look forward to seeing you soon on another edition of the Sprocket Podcast. My name is Brock.
And I'm Brandon.
And you are...
I'm Bison.
All right, and we're looking forward to seeing you later. Have a good one. Bye. Winning the future involves out hustling everybody else.
Gotta hustle.
Out hustling everybody else.
So I gotta go play pool in a smoky bar.
That's right, yeah. And you have to convince all the wily ladies there that you know.
Wily ladies?
The ladies with their wiles.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
If they're wily, they're hard to convince.
They are, it's true, yeah.
What am I trying to convince them of?
I guess you're just out
that
hustling.
I'm winning the future?
You're out hustling the other guys at the bar.
I see.
That's what he means.